Hello and welcome to the Partners for Access Rare Disease and Cell and Gene Therapy Weekly Roundup. I'm your host, Max Rex. Today, we have a special guest on the program. He is currently the International Developed Markets Public Affairs Lead at Pfizer's Rare Disease Unit here in Walton Oaks in the United Kingdom. In his role, he is responsible for external stakeholder engagement and internal cross-functional planning efforts to identify key opportunities and challenges across the rare disease policy landscape. His ultimate goal is to expand access to innovative and safe therapies and to improve standards of care for patients. In 2017, he co-authored a paper published in the Orphanet Journal of Rare Diseases entitled "A Review of 11 National Policies for Rare Diseases in the Context of Key Patient Needs." He's here today to talk to us about that paper. A warm welcome to Matthew Harold. So, Matt, what were the main motivations behind carrying out this research?
So thanks so much for having me here today. It's really exciting to be able to talk to you guys about this subject. I think what was a big motivation for myself and my colleagues to first of all do the research and to better understand was this topic is because I think we all know this fact that the rare disease environment as a whole is incredibly complex, and even more so the policy environment is rapidly evolving, rapidly changing. And so really trying to understand and make sense of that, not only for ourselves at Pfizer, but ultimately if we want to work with global stakeholders around the world to improve the policy environment, we ourselves have to understand that a bit more broadly. Now, I think when you take a step back, I think, just the point I raised about the rare disease environment being incredibly complex and challenging, I think that's something at Pfizer and personally in a lot of the travels and work that I do, is something we intimately recognize. And for me, an important part of that work that we do is around collaboration. And I think in rare disease, relative to what you see in current politics and geopolitical issues around the world and, increased nationalism, isolationism, moving away from alliances and multilateralism, I think rare disease is completely the opposite because the challenge is so great. Because there are 6,000 to 8,000 rare diseases with only 5% having, an approved treatment, and our knowledge of rare disease, though while it has improved over the past 10-15 years, is still quite elementary in some ways. And so the challenge that we face is incredibly complex. And truly, my own personal view, but also the view of the company for whom I work, Pfizer, is that we need to collaborate with the community at large if we're ever going to make headway to address these solutions. And so this paper wasn't just about necessarily, or this research wasn't necessarily just about doing research for the sake of it, but we realized that, there was a lot of valuable research here that, didn't need to just sit on a computer and a hard drive in the four walls of Pfizer, that really could benefit the community at large. And to do that, we partnered with, two patient advocates, Durhan Wong-Ringer, who is president of everything, I like to call her. She's Canadian by origin, but works for the Canadian Organization of Rare Diseases. She's the president CEO, but then also is part of Rare Disease International, a quite broad patient group in rare diseases, and a part of the Asia Pacific Alliance for Rare Diseases. So has really done a lot of work in the policy environment. And then also Sharon Terry, who's founded the U.S. Genetic Alliance and has been a really key voice in the rare disease policy debate around the world. So what I think we were ultimately trying to find out in this research and part of the broader publication that we authored was ultimately how the rare disease or policy environment works, and how, just specifically as Pfizer, but how as a community we can positively influence the policy environment such that positive change can occur for patients. Patients can get access to faster treatment, diagnosis, support services. And so that was really the main motivation behind it. What we wanted to get was understanding the pathways that allow for policy development such that patients can get quicker access, treatment, and care. So in this paper, what we tried to do was to categorize a very complex environment and looking across a number of different dimensions, diagnosis, which is a huge issue in rare diseases, care, treatment, access to medicines, community support, and research, all which are key components that we entitled a National Rare Disease Plan, or NRDP. And so we looked at 11 different countries and kind of looked across these countries and looked at, their national rare disease plans, whether they had one or not. And we looked at kind of the components that I mentioned around diagnosis, access to treatment and care. And we looked across a number of dimensions to see ultimately how each country fared on specific issues. So France is currently on its third national rare disease plan. It was actually just ratified a few months ago. And so what you see in France is not only access and treatment issues around access and treatment have been addressed, but France has really moved into focusing on issues around research and encouraging innovation around research and through its centers of excellence. So, it was very interesting to compare and contrast how different countries address the challenges of rare disease and leverage kind of the infrastructure and the expertise in countries to make headways in its rare disease policy.
What was the rationale behind your choice of countries to include in the analysis?
So as I mentioned, we chose 11 different countries to focus on: Argentina, Brazil, Bulgaria, Canada, China, France, Germany, Mexico, Taiwan, Turkey, and the UK. And to some, it might seem like there might be some, obvious countries in that, but some might think, how did you guys choose this set of countries? I think, we wanted globally to look across a wide swath of countries, not only geographically, but also in terms of size, diversity, and also, their national rare disease plan development. You have countries like France, who, again, are on their third national rare disease plan and quite advanced. And you have countries like China, who are in the process of putting together rare disease plans. We don't officially have a, integrated comprehensive plan, but are in the process to. And so we wanted to look at kind of those differences and see what are some of the challenges and opportunities in both types of models. And I think really what's interesting is that a plan, a specific legislation isn't always the key towards access. And a lack of policy development doesn't necessarily mean that patients aren't always getting access as well. So I think, national rare disease plans are incredibly important, but what the paper also highlights too is its implementation. And that's the role that, the patient groups and academia and doctors and industry can play a key role in thinking about how do we actually practically make sure that what's written in a book somewhere is actually implemented so that patients are getting access to the diagnosis services, to research, to treatment and care. So really we wanted to look at this because we have this hypothesis that just does policy necessarily equal access? And that's It usually does, but that's not always the case. So implementation here was really the key.
What were the key learnings from this research?
So the findings of this study revealed a wide range of development and implementation of national rare disease plans across the 11 different countries that we surveyed. And it ultimately suggested that, I think this doesn't come as a surprise to many people, that many countries can benefit from improving critical elements of their specific national rare disease plans. And I think, moreover, we looked at where countries fared in different levels of development. And so, a challenge of maybe of one country might not necessarily be the challenge or the area of focus for the other countries. So perhaps giving guidance around how countries can prioritize and really think about how to address some of the critical components in order to enable some of the biggest focus areas for care for rare disease patients. So I think, the data that we saw suggested that national policies, which really include well-developed patient engagement and support programs, ongoing education, continued research, ultimately improve patient access to care. And the role of the patient community, the reason why we have the Orphan Drug Act in the U.S., well, one of the key reasons why was a woman named Abby Myers, who in the 1980s took a stand and fought for something that she believed in because of her son. And you hear this story over and over again, that mom whose son, that parent, that, you know, relative whose friend was affected with a rare disease, and they took up arms to make a difference. And I think, you know, that's an important piece around why it matters, because the study gives us an opportunity to share knowledge and experiences across a number of different countries, but really thinking about this global rare disease policy environment and hoping that it can present some impactful recommendations that countries, patient advocates, that, you know, industry can take up and really advocate for in order to improve access to treatment, support services, care for all rare disease patients. I think, you know, as I said at the beginning, there's so much evolution in the rare disease policy environment, and kind of, again, the antithesis towards what we're seeing in the political sphere is now this really tight coordination in the rare disease space. And we're seeing multilateral institutions all the way from the UN to, you know, APEC, which is the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation, a multilateral economic institution. We're seeing so much evolution in the rare disease policy environment and collaboration and that need. And I think, you know, better understanding and diagnosing these issues is going to be a critical aspect if we're ever going to get to really, you know, push forward comprehensive action, you know, to improve to enhance the huge challenges that we face in rare disease. We need that coordination. We need the expert patients. We need those patients that are continually advocating for policy change. We need industry at the table. We need academia. We need HCPs. And so I think in some way this paper provides a lot of the fodder and a lot of the background that different, you know, stakeholders can work together to ultimately help to think about how can we improve the situation for rare diseases and rare disease patients. And it's a call to action. It's an opportunity for everyone to think differently and to think about how we can each, you know, play an important role in rare diseases. So, you know, it was great to have this opportunity, but it's my hope that we continue this research that is, as you know, policy is not static. And so we constantly need to look back at this work to see, is it continually fit for purpose? What has changed? What hasn't changed? How do we track this over time? How do we, you know, attribute you know, some of that development or lack of development? How can we work, again, more comprehensively, and how can we coordinate across different stakeholder groups to solve this challenge? There's almost a social contract when you think about the work that industry does. And I think ultimately society grants us the right towards intellectual property. And so in order to make medicines, in order to bring those medicines to bear, society grants us certain rights through, you know, government interaction, through, you know, regulatory pathways, but those can be taken away. And, you know, we've seen discussions around those, you know, questioning of those rights if, you know, with certain challenges to the rare disease environment. And so I think that, you know, we have to be a part of that collaboration. We have to be part of the solution. We have to make strides to show and to help society at large, which we're intricately a part of. We have to make strides. We have to really make efforts to help advance and to make, you know, make important strides that can help to improve the environment and make this a more friendly policy environment for everyone. But with the ultimate goal of, you know, never losing sight of that, it's the patient at the end. It's that mom. It's that you know, relative who's fighting for their child, fighting for someone who has a rare disease that no one's ever heard of. I think, you know, that's why we do this. And I think this paper to me is very important. It's a call for collaboration. It's a call for collective action. It's a call for really understanding and really addressing some of the systematic changes and needs at both a country and a regional level. And I think we're making strides, but I think, you know, there's a lot of ways to go. And in industry, we can play an incredibly important role in shaping and in helping to push. Public-private partnerships are alive and kicking, and I think we need to have a voice there, and we need to, you know, again, try to make this environment more friendly for everyone.
And that's it for this week. A special thank you to Matthew Harrold for giving us such fascinating insights into rare disease policy, and for so graciously giving up his time this week to be here. If you would like to contribute to our podcast in any way, please contact us at contact@partnersforaccess.com. For more news and analysis, go to our website www.partnersforaccess.com. On the 18th of October, P4A's managing partner, Sophie Schmitz, will be chairing a panel discussion on the challenges and solutions for rare diseases at the BIA's London-based event. Register now at the BIA's website to find out more. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and please do share your thoughts in the comments section. See you next week. Thanks for listening.